If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Syria, darkness visible. In civil war, at least since the first decade of the 21st century. But then again, the civil war has been going on for decades more than that, having to been absorbed in the tumult of coups and counter coups, at least since the breakup of the Ottoman Empire. Here we are in the 21st century, however, so let's apply to the facts that we have right now. I welcome Sinan Chitty of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, writing about this in 1945. We begin with fresh information. I'm told by a colleague, Jonathan Schenzer of Sinan's, that there is a story that the UN has invited al-Shara, the self-named president of Syria, former al-Qaeda operative, to speak at the United Nations. In addition, there is fresh information, FT reporting, that the U.S. intends to reduce its presence in eastern Syria, where it has been a watchdog on ISIS, from 5 bases to 3, headed to 1. That's enough up-to-date moments, because we turn now to al-Shara, his presentation in a blue suit with a trim beard, most notably shaking hands with the President of the United States in the presence of Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Is this a new man? Sinan, a very good evening to you. New man who has announced that there will not be elections for 5 years, despite the fact that he named himself president. What do we need to know about the risk of trusting al-Shara to reverse his conduct of the last decade as a cutthroat? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, lots of questions. It's just a lot of known unknowns. I mean, and those are essentially, how do you essentially present or place a significant amount of trust in a person and a government that he leads, whereby his past is so ingrained and so embedded in jihadist Salafist terrorism? And that's not because organizations that I, you know, such as I work for, or that, you know, of a similar mindset, say so. Let's not forget that the United States government, that is, you know, as well as other governments around the world, basically had a bounty on al-Shara's head, saying, you know, that he was a specially designated terrorist. And he has deep, deep ties embedded in Muslim Brotherhood, al-Qaeda-based and Islamic State-based teachings and activities. And as a result of that, now that he is 180% sort of on the other side of this, preaching, you know, moderation, tolerance, you know, unity and centrism, you know, even talking up things like essentially, you know, mending ties between Syria and Israel, talking about the potential, the extent to which Syria can participate in joining the Abraham Accords and normalize ties with Israel, something which, you know, is unimaginable given, you know, Syria's fraught relationships with Israel and every other state just about in the Western Hemisphere, right? But on the other hand, you know, Shiraz saying, look, you don't need to trust me. All you have to do is just watch what I do, you know, look at what I do. And you know, so far, you know, it's been a mixed bag. And you're right. My colleague, John Schanzer here at FDD, our executive director, is right to point out news from this morning saying that he has basically been invited to address the United Nations and to represent the Republic of Syria and address the United Nations General Assembly in September. Which will be, you know, quite extraordinary, because we've never seen you know, literally a designated terrorist at one time in his life address, you know, UN as head of state.
The puzzle about Syria is that it is not one thing. It's a combination of loyalties and traditions, and a product of the very clumsy breakup of the Ottoman Empire at the end of the First War, the Great War, 100 years ago. That is true for much of this region because it was based on the Ottoman Empire, which is now reduced to Turkey and the artifacts, the treasures of Turkey. However, we need to speak of Syria as we understand it since the Second War. The factions you name, and we'll address all of them, the factions have not been asked whether they believe al-Shara is the leader for their country for the future. I'm thinking of the Alawites, the Druze, the Christians, and other sects. There are lots of them throughout. This is an ancient land. Is that a concern that he doesn't poll his own constituency? He shakes hands with presidents. In other words, he's punching up only.
Look, there are many sort of unpredictabilities here. I think one of the major problems, if we could sort of say, like, what sort of troubles await Syria going forward with the Sharia presidency or this transitional sort of government that is not likely to have elections for the next 5 years going forward, I think the biggest like umbrella sort of concern that we have is the extent to which Sharia has control over Syria, right? And what do we mean by that is, look, he basically toppled the Assad regime with an organization, the terrorist entity that was descendant of al-Qaeda that was referred to as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. That's a fighting force of about, 15, 20, 25,000, depending on who you speak to, composed of all sorts of jihadist militias and entities that basically coalesced under Sharia's leadership. They have essentially, you know, in confluence and congruent with other militias now, other fighting forces have basically taken over the Syrian government and administration of the state. But they are basically concentrated around the main population centers in the sort of northwestern parts of the country. And there's a question mark as to how far the authority of the Sharia government extends throughout the entire country. Let's not forget that there are other sort of, you know, power centers that around Syria that have to sort of accept Sharia's governments and power. The Kurdish entity that's concentrated for the most part in the northeastern parts of the country, and they have a larger fighting force, the Syrian Democratic Forces, which are partnered with the United States. We have a large sort of component of Druze. We have Sunnis. We also have Alawites on the eastern, on the western shore along the Mediterranean, which, have had confrontation with elements of fighting militias that are allied to the Sharia government now since the fall of the Assad regime. So there are all these sorts of different components of Syria. And one of the things that links all of them, I think, is historically all these different factions that make up the Syrian Republic, there's a deep sense of grievances historically that go back. And the one thing that held all those grievances at bay historically is, you know, the Assad family rule. You know, this draconian and ruthless rule that kept everybody in check. And now that somebody else has taken over, the question is, will Sharia command the loyalty, the respect and authority of everyone in this state? Can he satisfy them? If he can't satisfy them, can he command their respect? I mean, we just don't know the answers to any of these. So it's going to be essentially, I would say, rocky at best. But people like me who look at this and say, well, I just think this is too good to be true, as in, you know, betting on a unified Syria that doesn't devolve into conflict once again, that's centrally governed by a central government, that, you know, where ethnic grievances, sectarian grievances and divisiveness is not going to resolve in conflict once again. I'm personally resounded right now, not because I don't want to see it. I just think this is too good to be true.
The State Department is said to be in conversation with al-Shara or his representatives about lifting sanctions. I leave that aside because I come to a mystery that may not be one. Turkey. Does al-Shara sit in Damascus or travel to Riyadh or anticipate a visit to New York without the extreme effort and support of Ankara? Is this not an avatar for the Turkish ambitions in the region, the neo-Ottomanists? or do we see him as an independent actor? Can we tell?
Again, that's a very good question. I would say to you, I don't think we have a clear answer to that. I think there are convincing arguments that would sort of put both sides of this case, which is to suggest that on the one hand, Shiraz very sort of careful and not to be seen as a puppet or as a sort of stooge of Erdogan and, you know, Turkey, even though Erdogan and Turkey have been very sort of complimentary of him. We've just seen a major sort of energy deal of $7 billion signed between the Shiraz government and Qatari and Turkish energy firms, right, that will power significantly large swaths of Syria. We have seen Turkish construction firms, infrastructure firms, banking firms, essentially vying for Syrian sort of Syrian markets since the lifting of sanctions. And we have seen Shiraz visit Ankara. We've seen him have, you know, numerous sort of meetings with Turkish officials like the foreign minister, the intelligence chief. Turkey's offered up sort of military assistance and training and the potential sales of equipment. So Ankara has done a lot to court Shiraz. And it certainly would like it in its sphere of influence, because there are some who think that Shiraz, under Ankara's tutelage, should be, you know, as Erdogan sees it, as his sort of protege to sort of use as a launchpad to continue projecting Ankara's influence into the wider Middle East. So that's one. But to what extent Shiraz feels comfortable with that, we don't know. This is. So on the other hand of the balance sheet, we do see a Shiraz that is also becoming very sort of comfortable, sort of building stronger ties, a stronger relationship with the wider Gulf and Arab region, specifically Saudi Arabia, as well as countries such as Qatar, as well as the United Arab Emirates, simply because, unlike Turkey, these countries have a significant sort of potential to invest monetarily into the new Syria, which Turkey does not have. And, you know, if Shiraz is the pragmatist, the sort of a person who's renounced jihadism, as he says, and is interested in rebuilding Syria as a sort of genuine participant of the community of nations, then he's going to need access to build up Syria economically. And the only way to do that is to basically really go after and build substantive ties with the Arab powers. And so one part of this is, as we've seen, is he's built up, you know, his more sort of overt and primary sort of visits has been to shake the hands and take the first meetings with, you know, like people like, you know, Mohammed bin Salman and other Arab leaders prior to meeting with Turkish officials. So one thing that we could say is maybe he's playing a fine balancing act, not to be seen as a puppet of one leader or another, but really trying to sort of balance a lot of the complicated relationships, because, you know, the Arab world does not necessarily want to see a resurgent Turkey in the region, right? They don't want to just hand the keys of Syria with an Shiraz presidency over to Erdogan and his influence, right? And so Shiraz is probably aware of this and wants to sort of balance.
A detail, the Damascus situation right now is HTS, whatever it calls itself, the new Syrian army, is in control of Damascus. That considerably blocks Tehran's ability to resupply its allies in Lebanon and carry on its aggression in the region. Is that a factor for Turkey, that they've been blocked by this, I call him an avatar because it's not clear, but by this new player? And is Turkey now in contest with Tehran? We just can't see it because they're all this happy talk.
Right. So that's one of the hopes, right? That this is one of the reasons why the United States, I think, is under this administration, is really trying to sort of, you know, sort of nurture this, you know, budding relationship between Turkey and the Shiraz government, as well as, you know, Saudi Arabia's backing of the Shiraz government, because, you know, it is seen as a bulwark against any potential of Iran cropping back into, you know, Syria's sort of zone of influence. And for decades, it was very influential when Syria, under the Assad governments, was basically a weak central government, which allowed Syria to be dominated monetarily, militarily, but influence-wise by Iran under the Mullah regime, right? And that basically allowed Syria to be a major transit point for all sorts of smuggling operations, mainly weapons to help supply Hezbollah right across its border into Lebanon, right? So one of the hopes is right now, the extent to which that is now no longer an option, is that, you know, if the Syrian regime is able to flourish under Sharia and become a stable political entity that's pro, you know, Western and essentially sort of becomes a stable entity and actor, that that will also have sort of positive knock-on effects in terms of basically diminishing Iran's influence in places like Lebanon, and will allow Lebanon to essentially become also less of a threat to regional powers such as Israel, and allow it to sort of divest itself of entities such as, and really unearth entities such as Hezbollah from its territories and build it up too. So that's the hope. Again, I think the potential for that, let alone realization of it, the potential for that is a long way off. And we'll just have to sort of watch what that sees. But this is one of the reasons why proponents of, you know, bolstering Sharia's regime is really pushing for this. But I would have to caution this and say, look, we have just lifted sanctions and provided general licenses we've opened up Syria financially to the world right now. You know, Syrian financial banks, the Syrian government, for the most part, as I understand, can engage in financial transactions, you know, access world banking. There is a significant amount of worry as to the amount of illicit monies and financing that can now flow through Syria. And one big worry is I would say, at least the questions are being asked is, to what extent, for example, could Syria now be used as a new staging ground, a new country that would allow Russia to find, you know, funnel oligarchs' money to circumvent international sanctions and to allow money, illicit monies, to flow through its system, because every other regional country is barred from essentially taking Russian monies. And Syria could, based on its opening up to the international financial system with sanctions lifted, could provide a fertile ground for this. At least the worry is there, if you see what I mean.
Sinan Shadi of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. We're going to check in quickly on Turkish politics because there's an arrest that continues.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.